Good morning, Dr. Sonia. How are you today?
Good morning. I'm well, thank you.
Great to hear. I think we'll just jump right into a couple of questions. Dr. Sonia, just give us a little update, I guess, of what really is
Sure.
going on in Ukraine at the moment. What is the news not showing us? Because obviously the news has fizzled out a little bit compared to a couple of months ago when the war first began.
Sure. Look, I think you're correct to say that it's not having the same kind of news coverage, which is very sad because the tragedy continues. You are right that we have reached a milestone of 6 months since the full-scale invasion of Ukraine from Russia on February 24, remembering that this is actually part of a war that has been going on for 8 years. Now, in the last few days, we saw Ukraine celebrate, well, celebrate's not the right word, commemorate its Independence Day, which is on August 24. And unfortunately, that was a very, very difficult day for people in Ukraine because there was a heightened threat of Russian airstrikes all across Ukraine all day. Air raid signs were going off, and people were forced to hide in bomb shelters. And no, they just came out again, and then another siren would strike. And in fact, in a town called Chaplina, a train was struck and 25 people were burned to death. So that was the day of Independence Day. In general, what's happening is that, yes, the war is still on. Yes, Ukrainians are still resisting very strongly. And Russians are occupying the east of Ukraine and the south of Ukraine. And what's happening is that Ukraine is basically preparing for what they call a counter offensive, means fighting back to reclaim the land in the south. And the reason why Ukraine's been able to do that is because actually, militarily, the war has changed. And it's changed because America, the United Kingdom, have been providing what we call long range and very precise missiles, meaning that they travel a long way and very precisely. And that means that Ukraine has been able to destroy 50 ammunition depots. So 50 places where Russia is keeping its weapons and its ammunition. And that has what that sort of th those very precise and long range weapons in the hands of Ukrainians is what has changed the war at the moment.
Thank you so much for the detail of what some important aspects of what really is going on in Ukraine. Now, for me personally, like when I've been just listening to and watching various different news, I'm not just here in Australia, but I'm overseas as well. Some news outlets are pointing out that Ukraine is finding it quite troubling with the situation because obviously Russia has, I guess, some are saying that they have more manpower compared to Ukraine. Is that true? Is Ukraine still going
Yes.
strong and fighting back, or is there been a bit of a change in the mood? Has there been some loss, I guess, of a little bit of hope because this just is ongoing, and this despite efforts from other nations to try and support Ukraine, it's an ongoing situation.
Look, it's a very, very good question you ask. And surprisingly, the answer is that Ukrainians are still very, very strong, very motivated. The last public opinion poll of only a couple of weeks ago still say that 93% of Ukrainians think that they will win, and that at more than 85% do not want to make a peace treaty, which means that they would lose any of their territory. So Ukrainians' resistance is still very strong. The Ukrainian army went from 300,000 to 700,000 in this 6 months, and it's a plan to go to 1 million. And the Ukrainians have enough people wanting to join the army. The problem is, though, that you are correct in saying that the Russians can draw on a larger pool of human beings. The Russian Federation, I mean, of course, the Russian Federation is made up not only of actually Russia, but many other territories. And, in many ways, there's a kind of racist aspect to what Russia is doing because it is actually recruiting soldiers from not from Russia itself, but from many of the Eurasian republics. The percentage, I mean, I remember reading not long ago that, for every one you know, ethnic Russian who is fighting, there's something like, you know, 60 or 80 non-ethnic Russians, so non-Russian sort of people, because they're peoples who are being drawn from all other territories in the Russian Federation. So that remains a problem. The other problem is that Russia employs mercenaries. There's a very sort of infamous unit, very ruthless unit of soldiers called the Wagner unit, and they are people who Russia are paying to be soldiers. So yes, you're right that Ukraine still is outnumbered in terms of people, but that's why these extra good weapons, extra effective weapons that they are getting. Just this morning, it was announced on Ukrainian news that the Ukrainians are also going to be given anti-aircraft defense systems, very highly powered. So basically, Ukrainians are going to be able to protect their skies better from those attacks from the sky. And also, they're going to continue to keep on focusing not so much on killing people, on eliminating Russian soldiers, but on eliminating the weapons and even bridges. Now, in the south of Ukraine, for example, Ukrainians are focusing on destroying the bridges that lead into the areas that the Russians are occupying, because that cuts off the supply lines. That makes it harder for Russians to resupply their army. So, you know, the war has gone into a slightly different mode. But no, I think there is still great optimism, if that's the right word. There's still hope. I mean, this morning I was actually reading that several analysts feel that by the end of the year, Ukraine will have been able to reclaim the territory that it had on February 24.
That's the date. That's the that we got to mark down, and hopefully it would be before then. I love that you're telling us that people are still very hopeful in Ukraine. I think that's something maybe that doesn't get shown as much in the news. It's just a lot of who's, you know, what's going on, like territory that's been taken, who's dying, who's, you know, passed away. It's just on that line, which is a bit devastating in some ways. But I think it's great to hear from you personally, Dr. Sonia, that there is hope. There is still hope amongst Ukrainians. And I think that's a very important aspect. Talking about hope, I just wanted to throw it to you and ask you a bit more about your family, because I know that you have close family and friends in Ukraine who are firsthand experiencing this war. How are they feeling, and are they doing okay?
Look, thank you very much for asking, because as you were just giving your last comment, I kept thinking I'd like to mention my own family. My cousin and her family are in a city called Chernihiv, that is northeast of Kyiv. Now, on Independence Day, on last Wednesday, I effectively was in communication with her for 24 hours. What was happening was that she was, every hour or so, she was contacting me and saying that air raid sirens, they've been told that they should stay home, not leave their apartments, but as soon as they hear an air raid sign, to go down to the basement of their building or to go wherever their safest place is. And it was really disturbing, because every hour she contacted me, I could hear her becoming more and more panicked, and I could hear her becoming more and more anxious. And she started at one point to say goodbye to me, that maybe, you know, the last time she came back from the shelter, the missiles, bombs were very high, very close to their building. So she became more and more disturbed. But in the middle of the night, when she was contacting me and saying, yes, look, I'm still okay, we're still here, she started to say, we will not give up. We will not give up. But she started to say, we will not give up any territory. And it doesn't matter what we have to go through, but we will not give up on Ukraine. And, you know, that was after 12 hours of being, you know, anxious and tense and going back and forward from safety to danger. And I think that actually just shows you that Ukrainian people are really still prepared, and they're prepared to keep on fighting.
Yeah, that's really, I guess, I want to say great to hear that she is obviously safe and that she was able to celebrate Independence Day. But of course, at the same time, the amount of anxiety you must have felt along with your cousin and her family would have been immensely
difficult. It was a very difficult night. Yeah, it was a very difficult night. But, you know, Annie, I mean, every night is difficult. I mean, those of us who have family members there, or even family members, I mean, some of my family have managed to evacuate to Poland and to the Czech Republic. And, you know, they're finding life difficult in a different way because in some ways, you know, at first you are very grateful that you're safe as a refugee. But then the next phase, you need to enter the next phase, which is how to make a new life for yourself. And it's very difficult when, you know, you don't speak that language. I mean, family members of mine, for example, one of my cousins is 15, the other one is 10. They have to now, on the 1st of September is the European school year beginning. So in a few days' time, they need to, you know, begin the school year not speaking the language, not being away from home, being away from their own parents, because their father is left in Chernihiv fighting. And that's my cousin who was a soldier. And he's been left there in that area, and he's facing another problem now, which is that there are unexploded bombs and missiles and landmines all across the region of Chernihiv, because that had been a region occupied by Russian soldiers. When they left, they planted all kinds of devices that to endanger people. And he and his unit of six men, their job now is to go and find these landmines and remove them, or find these unexploded bombs and remove them. And in fact, I'm actually just right now, literally today, going to be purchasing a metal detector, or two to be honest, and sending them directly to him, because they don't have the necessary equipment. So, you know, if any of your listeners feel that they'd be able to support me in that, you know, you have my email, and if they contact you, I'd really love to hear from them, because, you know, even, I mean, that the metal detector, I'm purchasing one for about $700 and one for $1,200, which, you know, is a lot of money in one way, but in another way, you know, it's not a lot of money for saving people's lives.
I really wanted to ask you, like, what can we do, obviously, to help you out, or other Ukrainians out there, of course, fighting the war in Ukraine, with anything in general? Is there anything we can do to maybe donate money? Can we buy metal detectors and send them somewhere for people to use?
Yes. Look, I'm glad that you found it appropriate that I mentioned this, because I wasn't sure whether I should speak in such a personal capacity, but it is really good to be able to tell you my story, and the fact that I know personally what is involved, even in the areas of Ukraine now, that where the Russian forces have left. Unfortunately, what they've left, as I said, are booby traps, bombs. Some of these were actually specially implanted, you know, as they were leaving. And it means that the civilian population now can't continue to live normally. I know that, for example, farmers who would want to be clearing their land, sowing seeds, getting ready for the next season, can't do that, because literally the fields have landmines all over them. Even the rivers and the streams, even people's houses. I mean, my cousin and his men, they are on a daily basis risking their lives by needing to go into farms, into houses, into even garden sheds, and search and find unexploded devices. And of course, it's a very, very dangerous thing for them to be doing. And unfortunately, Ukraine just does not have enough metal detectors, because so many parts of Ukraine, I mean, I should have had at my fingertips the statistics I read the other day, but they're saying that it will literally take decades to clean the Ukrainian territory after, you know, what's been going on. Now, in the case of my family, I know someone in Canberra, an Australian person in Canberra, who has been fundraising, just using sort of a GoFundMe page and that kind of thing. And he has a container. He has been working with a company here in Australia that manufactures these metal detectors, and he's been working with our government and with the Ukrainian government, the actual Ukrainian Defense Ministry, and they have chosen two models of land mine detectors, which are basically metal detectors. But one type of metal detector can search over water, which means that over a stream or a lake or, you know, a shallow part of a river, it can detect whether there is some metal there lurking that needs to be removed. And the other type is cheaper but very compact and easy to carry around. So as I said, one of those is costing about $700, one is costing about $1,200. The company's been wonderful. The company's actually given a reduction in price because it is going to Ukraine. But unfortunately, from my angle, I would have just worked with that arrangement. But once those metal detectors get to Ukraine, it's going to be up to them as to where they are sent. Like, the Ukrainian government will then decide where those metal detectors are sent. And I, on the other hand, you know, desperately want to get one of each to my cousin for his unit in Chernihiv region. And that's why what I've decided to do is to purchase from that shipment one of each detector myself and actually send it there. Thankfully, I mean, I've been doing my research and we are able to send quite effectively. The post is still working and reaching Ukraine. So that's what I'm raising money for. And in actual fact, today is my birthday and I'm about to write an email to my friends saying, I've never asked for a present before, but please, if you would like to donate even $10 or $20 to this, then I can give you the details of the account to put, you know, even a small amount of money into. So really, if any of your listeners feel that they could contribute or would like to contribute, perhaps the best thing to do is to go to the website of the Ukrainian Association of Sydney. That if you just look up Ukrainian Association of Sydney, there'll be an email address, and that email address will get directly to me as one of the volunteers working at that centre. And then, you know, we can be in contact as to how else they can help. But, you know, that form of help is so direct. You know that metal detector will go directly to a group of people. And as my colleague in Canberra was saying to me, it can be the difference between someone losing their legs. You know, every single mine that is removed means less danger for an unsuspecting civilian who is walking across a field, walking down the road, walking to school, walking, you know, across a bridge, across a river, trying to, you know, catch a fish in a river. I mean, these are all just daily activities by putting Ukrainians at risk now.
Of course. Yeah, for sure. Just, I think it's quite devastating that it's the normal civilians that are having to go in and to search for these bombs. But I guess at the same time, it is important to get rid of them, or else, you know, like, communities cannot come back to their homes and live how they used to, because there's just a fear of not knowing where these bombs are. I think, and thank you so much for sharing that with us. I think that's really important, something that doesn't get told in news. And of course, I'll make sure to link your email as well as the Ukrainian Association here in Sydney, to make sure that if anyone is able to contribute, they can contribute towards that, and they know that exactly where that money's going. But yeah, thank you so much for your time, Dr. Sonia. I think it's just been great to get an update from you personally, because obviously we spoke.
Yeah, I hope so. Thank you very much, Annie, and thank you to your listeners.